That way nobody wins. Epilogue, the myth of handmade gifts. Unreturnable, unusable, unsightly, unfun. These are just some of the words you can use to describe handmade gifts, unless you're related to a talented furniture maker, clothing designer, or you're someone's grandma. Getting a handmade gift for Christmas is never not disappointing. Even grandmas secretly hate them, but society forces them to repress their real feelings about being gypped. Instead, they have to pretend they love multicolored, glitter-covered macaroni sculptures. Why do we put the aged through this kind of strain? They just want a DVD player like everybody else. When considering giving a homemade gift, just think to yourself, is this a gift I would like to get? And then think to yourself, why do I still have this leather burning tool when putting your name on the back of your belt went out of style in 1976? And then think, is it right for me to heap the byproducts of my knitting hobby onto my friends and family in lieu of buying them actual gifts that cost actual money? And then think, why am I so selfish? Not just about the crafts, but about everything I do and say. It's always me, me, me. Look what I can make, and look how fast I can knit. I never think about what it would be like to receive a scarf with leather piping that has my name burnt into it. It would be creepy and irritating, especially because when it's wrapped, it's exactly the same shape as two bars of gold. There, I think I've said my piece. With all this in mind, get out there and let the people you care about most, or whose names you drew in the Secret Santa gift exchange at work, know exactly how much you're thinking about them this holiday season by picking out fun, useful, and exciting gifts. Then, after you've been shopping for 2 hours and you realize you don't know what your father's interests are, give up and go to the bulletproof option, the gift certificate. Silence is golden. I think people talk too much. Talk, 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 talk. Sometimes when people are talking, in my mind, all I'm saying is shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, blah, 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 blah. People are scared of silence. If you find silence, people always have to fill it with something. The world is so full of noise, it's nearly impossible to find silence. I happen to believe that silence is golden. In life, it's one small thing I can hold on to. Silence is where all of the answers are. It's where our truth is, our passion, our path, our everything. All of the answers are in silence, if you can find it. I was outside not too long ago, and I tried to meditate. I closed my eyes, and I got into that still place that everybody talks about. Just for a moment, but I was there. And the first message that I got, so strongly and so clearly, was that we are all one. Every living thing. We are all connected. And the next thing I felt was this little tiny thing on the palm of my hand, and I opened one eye, and I saw that there was this little mosquito in the palm of my hand, this little prehistoric-looking creature, this strange bug. And I was thinking about how we're all connected, and I looked at this thing, and then I just killed it. And then I went back to my loving state of being. And the next thing I heard was, would you like anything else, or will that be all? I told the waiter I was meditating, idiot. Thanks a lot for interrupting. He wasn't getting a tip anyway. It took forever to get the veal. So I decided an outdoor cafe was not the best place to be spiritual. People are too rude and stupid. So I left and started walking to my car, which was about 3 blocks away. The parking situation is crazy because the world is overpopulated with the wrong kind of people. So, back to the loving place. I was walking, and I saw my car, and I saw a meter maid standing at my car writing a ticket. Please, wait, stop. Please don't write the ticket. I'm here, I said. And she said, oh, I'm sorry, but you parked illegally in front of a fire hydrant. I said, oh, illegally in front of a fire hydrant, mocking her. Please stop talking to me that way, she said. So I took a different approach. Please be compassionate. Don't give me the ticket. I'm here. And she said, oh, I'm sorry. I've already started writing. I can't stop. Oh, that's how it works? You've already started writing, so you can't stop? Oh, well, I would like to not hit you, but my fist is already in the air, okay? And back to the loving place. I got into my car and lit a cigarette, praying to where I would be led. And I heard, drive. It was a meter maid. So I started driving, and it's so hard to drive and be compassionate and loving because of the way people drive. I was behind someone, and they were going so slow I could have gotten out of my car and walked around and said, "Sorry, I have to pass you, but you're going a little too slow." Anyway, so I pulled around to give them that I hate you look. How else are they going to learn, right? I mean, it's up to us. And it turns out it was a nun. Can you believe that? I said, "Why don't you take a vow not to drive? Drop it like a bad habit." And back to the loving place. Again, I found myself praying to be led to where I should be, and then I saw a health food store, just right there. It appeared right before my eyes, and I thought, well, that seems spiritual. I've never been in a health food store before. I don't know if you've ever been in a health food store, but hey, if that's healthy, sorry, don't want to be it. People who work in these places are so proud of themselves. "Guess how old I am," they say. I don't know. Guess. 30? I'm 16, but the point is I've never had dairy. Okay, good for you. So, anyway, I go into this health food store and the person at the counter says, "Let me see your tongue." "What? Let me see your tongue." "Ah, oh, you're full of toxins. You're full of toxins. What a stupid thing to say to me." Turns out I needed an herb for something inside of me, like the spleen or something that's inside, because something needed something because something happened. Anyway, I learned this because this health food person practices this thing called kinesiology. They put herbs in your hand, and if your arm goes down, you need those herbs. Sounds stupid, but actually it's not. It works. And I'll tell you, last week I was at Gucci. I had a sweater in my hand. Went right down. A couple minutes earlier, I had a dress in my hand. It didn't go down at all. See? It works. So he, she, I don't know what it was. Name was Earth Spirit. What's that, a boy's name? Earth Spirit said, "You need some wheatgrass juice." "Wheatgrass juice? Do I need a sprout wrap too?" And Earth Spirit said, "Your aura's brown." I said, "Your aura's brown? What a stupid thing to say to me." "Oh, we're going to have to call the security guard." "Ooh, the health food security guard. What's his name? Whispering Pine? Is my meat breath offending you?" Anyway, I left. They kicked me out. So I was driving again, back to the loving place, praying I'd be led to where I was supposed to be, and suddenly a wave of energy hit me. "Okay, you're out of rum. If you're quiet, it'll come." So I went to the liquor store, and there was no parking. I had to park across the street in some stupid parking lot, again, because, you know, wrong kind of people. So I went into this liquor store to get my rum, pack of smokes, and some rolling papers. Right on. I came out, went to my car, and a parking attendant was standing right next to my car. Wasn't there when I got out of my car, but all of a sudden standing there. "Oh, you can't park here for that establishment. To park here, you have to go to this establishment and purchase something and get validated." I said, "Please be compassionate, idiot." "No, you have to go in here." So anyway, looked like a spiritual type place that I was being led to. It was called the Pleasure Chest or something like that. Some type of toy store, it seemed. Unsafe toys, though, because I was playing with some of them, and I'll tell you, this pogo stick is going to hurt somebody. It's bad on your back, and it's not sturdy. So in order to get my car to the parking lot, I had to buy something. It was getting late, and I didn't want to deal with the traffic, and I wanted to get into the carpool lane, so I bought a blow-up doll. I don't know if I didn't blow it up properly or what, but after a little while it started to deflate, so I had to pull over onto the side of the road to inflate it again. Why they put the valve in the crotch area, I don't know. Silly. It's silly what it is. So there I was on the side of the road blowing up Linda, I named her. And that's when there was a knock at the window. It was a cop, of course. I thought, this does not look good at all, you know? It did not help matters any that I was naked. And I'll tell you why that is. If you're going to buy a blow-up doll, be forewarned. These dolls do not come with clothes. I don't know what that's about, but they're no clothes at all. You can't even dress them up. So I thought, I'm not going to look like a crazy person driving around with a naked passenger. I'm not stupid. So there I was, naked, except for the harness. I bought a harness and a captain's hat and a paddle. I'm standing on the side of the road, getting handcuffed in my harness and captain's hat and a paddle, holding Linda. And the cop said, "You have the right to remain silent." And I said, "Finally. That's what I've been looking for all along." Making your life count and other fun things to do with your time. The day started like any other day. My alarm rang at 8 a.m. I hit the snooze for roughly 4 hours until it was noon. Time to rise and shine. Bleary-eyed, I searched my nightstand for my list of things I wanted to get done that day. Immediately, I checked off, "Get up," and proceeded to read through the rest of my tasks. Pick up socks at dry cleaners. Measure dental floss to determine how much is left on the roll. Mail ketchup rebate form. Special order James Lipton bobblehead. Buy more paper to write lists on. As I finished reading my list, I suddenly felt sad and empty. Maybe it's because you're hungry, I told myself, but there was no response. I'm not what you'd call a morning person, so I don't always answer my own questions. So I made my way down to the kitchen and whipped up some French toast and pancakes with a side of waffles. Nope, I thought after I finished, I still feel empty. The truth was I couldn't stop thinking about my list and how all my daily errands only revolved around me. There was nothing there about saving the pygmy possum from extinction or setting up a feng shui institute for needy children in Suriname. It seemed I had completely forgotten to put Save the World at the top of my list, and I didn't know if I still had time to do it. Life is short. If you doubt me, ask a butterfly. Their average lifespan is a mere 5 to 14 days. I headed out to my backyard in search of a butterfly who would have the special insight into making the most of my short existence. I spotted a bright yellow variety alighted on my bougainvillea bush and introduced myself. Hi, I'm Ellen DeGeneres. I live in the house back there. Boy, you sure are pretty. Could I ask you a few questions? Yes, said the butterfly, nervously checking her watch, but make it quick. There's a PBS documentary on water conservation that I want to catch. It was a swatch, by the way, a really teeny tiny swatch. Those Swiss are design geniuses. I've been thinking, I said hurriedly. Life goes by fast. I feel like I haven't really contributed. How can life be made worthwhile in such a short amount of time? I don't know what to tell you, said the butterfly impatiently. I'm only 3.5 days old, and I've already volunteered my time to help a village in Bhutan increase their crop productivity by 80%. But you look like you've got a lot of life left in you. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking? I'm 45. A note to the listener, as you listen to this, I might be younger or older, depending on whether you've recently traveled in a time machine. That's nothing, she said, preening. Look at me. I'm middle-aged, and I've never felt better. My doctor says if I keep eating right and cut down on my smoking, I'll live for another 4 days. He's a great guy. Met him when I was a day trader for 3 minutes last Tuesday. You were a day trader? I asked in amazement. Oh, I've had many careers. Yesterday, for about 60 seconds, I gave acting a try, but my agent barely sent me out on anything. I'm sure I don't have to tell you about the rampant ageism in Hollywood. Oh, yeah. Tough business, I interrupted, trying to get back on track. Please tell me, what can I do to make my life count? She thought for a second, which for her must have been an eternity, and finally said, "Don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today." Then she took a peek at her wrist again. Well, not actually her wrist, I guess, but I'm not up on butterfly anatomy. "Thanks for the great advice. I'll start tomorrow. Can I stop by and tell you how it's going?" "I might not be here," she said, fluttering away. "Tomorrow I teach English as a second language course in the valley from 25 seconds past 1 to 28 seconds past 1. "For only 3 seconds?" I yelled up to the sky, but by that time she was gone. Now, I don't want you to think that this butterfly in fact spoke with me. That would just be plain silly. Butterflies can't talk. I'm not Dr. Ellen Doolittle. I'm Ellen DeGeneres. The previous conversation was what I thought the butterfly might say, if blessed with the power of speech. I say this because if I ever invite you to a dinner party, I wouldn't want you to bring your cat along as a date, thinking Snuffles might be a witty conversationalist, just so we're clear. The next morning, I got up early, grabbed my list of 5 selfless tasks, and headed out to accomplish item number 1, walk an old lady across the street. I live in L.A., where old means the wrong side of 24, so I knew this one would be easy. I spotted an oldster listening to her iPod, waiting on a corner for the light to change. "Hello, ma'am. Do you need help across the street?" For a moment, the glare of her belly ring blinded me. I repeated the question and made an attempt to link her arm and mine. I must say she seemed pretty agile for someone of advanced years. She ran very fast, skillfully dodging cars across all 4 lanes, and she kept on running when she reached the other side. Well, she was across the street, and whether directly or indirectly, I had helped. 1 down, 4 more to go. Next on the agenda, plant a tree. Frankly, I didn't have time to get a tree and plant it on some remote spot. Instead, I bought a few apples, took out the seeds, and scattered them in front of a Target Great Land a la Johnny Appleseed. One day, I hoped, the entire area would become the only apple orchard in the world with ample parking. With a flourish, I checked off number 2. It was almost time for breakfast, a perfect time to conserve energy, which was number 3 on the list. It was about 100 degrees in incessantly sunny L.A. that day. Hot enough to fry an egg on the sidewalk, as my mother used to mutter under her breath, almost accusatorily. Of all the things she could get on my case about, as we used to say, I still can't believe she picked the weather, as opposed to, say, my huge bell-bottoms or my continual use of the phrase, "You're not the boss of me." So in order to get that pesky number 3 out of the way, I decided the best way to conserve was to harness the energy of the sun. If a bunch of drug-addled hippies could do it, why couldn't I? I cracked 2 eggs on the sidewalk and covered them in a light but tangy hollandaise sauce. Then I waited. Maybe it wasn't hot enough to use concrete as a stovetop, as my mother had always led me to believe, but it was hot enough to jump in my car, turn on the air conditioner, and head over to Denny's. Sitting in a cozy booth, I dug into my Eggs Benedict and revised my goals. After deep contemplation, I came to the conclusion that using alternative energy in place of fossil-fueled energy was still technically using energy, not conserving it. So, to stay true to old number 3, I decided I would sit motionless in Denny's until they stopped refilling my root beer. After 4 hours and 37 trips to the bathroom, I realized that no energy conservation was taking place. I paid the bill, $2.14, how do those people stay open, and felt justified checking off number 3. At least I hadn't mentioned anything about water conservation. Volunteer as a big sister was item number 4. Unfortunately, the day was almost over, so calling the Big Brothers and Sisters of America was out of the question. Thinking quickly, I called up my 10-year-old neighbor, Abigail Van Splinter. Within minutes, she knocked on the door and I invited her in. "Hi, Abigail. I'm your big sister." "No, you're not." "Yes, I am." "Hey, Abigail, do you want a Hertz donut?" "Okay." I gave her a playfully hard punch on the arm. "Hertz, don't it." "You're mean." "I know you are, but what am I?" "You're picking on me just like my real big sister. I don't need this. I'm going home." Man, that one was easy. 4 down, only 1 to go. Number 5 was a real doozy. To be honest, since I wasn't even quite sure where the Amazon rainforest was, single-handedly revitalizing it was going to be a challenge. My knowledge of geography is primarily limited to where I've gone on tour. I couldn't recall performing stand-up in a rainforest, Amazonian or otherwise. Thinking quickly, and quite geniusly, I turned number 5 into a big fat 1. Then I put it on the top of my list for the next day. I stopped to think about the things that I had accomplished and how much they would mean to the world. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but I knew that my medium-sized contributions would really have an impact in the not-so-distant future. My ripple could be felt as close as next door with little Abigail waking up tomorrow morning with a sore arm and a stronger resilience. Or as far away as however far away that rainforest on my list is. That night I went to bed early, my list for the next day poised on my nightstand, but first I made an important addition. Number 2. Buy an atlas. This is how we live. Everyone likes to talk about how advancements in technology will change the way we live forever. Frankly, I think that modern technology is hurting us. I really do. If you want to know the truth, I blame the microwave for most of our problems. Anything that gets that hot without fire is from the devil. If you don't believe me, you put a hot pocket in there for 3 or 4 minutes, pop that thing in your mouth. If that's not hell, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what is. Modern life requires hardly any physical activity. We just push a button and stand there. Take the car window. Someone decided that having to crank the window down yourself was too hard. "I don't want to churn butter, I just want fresh air." So we got a button to do it. We're just so lazy. We used to have breath mints. Now we have these breath strips that just dissolve on our tongue. Can we not suck anymore? Yes, we're lazy. Yet we also can't seem to sit still. So we've started making things like Go-Gurt. That's yogurt for people on the go. Let me ask you something. Was there a big mobility problem with yogurt before? How time-consuming was it, really? Hello? Oh, hi, Tom. Oh, I've been dying to see that movie. Oh, no, it just opened up some yogurt. Yeah, I'm in for the night. Not even later. It's the kind with the fruit on the bottom. Well, have fun. Thanks anyway. And people are eating power bars all the time. Power bars were made for mountain climbing expeditions and hiking, not really made to be eaten in the car on the way to the mall. Is it really that much faster and more convenient? It takes longer to chew one bite of those things than it takes to make an entire sandwich. I don't know what they're made from, but you could insulate a house with that stuff. There are certain things that they're coming up with that I just don't think we need. Top of the list is that moving sidewalk that you find in airports. It's like a little ride in the middle of nowhere. But I don't know what function it really serves. I mean, it's fun, because it moves. So if you walk while you're on it, you're almost like the bionic woman just flying past the people trudging beside you on the ground. But you know how hard it is, adjusting to walking once again, once you get off that thing? And what about those people who get on there and they just stand there? Thank God they're on there. I don't know how they get anywhere. You'd think with all these things that are speeding things up for us and moving us along, people would be early, or at least on time. But somehow everybody's still always late. They always say the same thing when they finally show up after you've been waiting for them. Oh, sorry. Traffic. Really? How you think I got here? Helicoptered in? I allow for it. How else does technology torture us? We'll try opening up a brand new CD. What has happened to the packaging of CDs? These are angry, angry people, these CD packagers. Open here. Is that sarcasm? Are they mocking me? And that plastic they use is so thick, it's like they're trying to keep it fresh. This is government plastic. Civilians can't buy this stuff. And you can't get through the stuff without slashing it with a knife or scissors or something. In fact, I find you need a sharp pair of scissors to get into just about anything these days. Have you tried to open a package of scissors lately? You need scissors to get into scissors. But what if you're buying scissors for the first time? I mean, how can you possibly get in there? Talk about a catch-22. Batteries are also packaged like they never want you to get in them. What could possibly happen to batteries that manufacturers need to package them like that? On the other hand, take a good look at the packaging of light bulbs. Thin, thin, thin cardboard, open on both ends. What are those packagers thinking? Oh, the light bulbs? They'll be fine. It's hard to get into anything, even toilet paper. What has happened to toilet paper in public bathrooms? It's not even one ply anymore, is it? It's a sheer suggestion of toilet paper. It's an innuendo. It's like prosciutto. It's so thin. And if you're in a public bathroom and it's a brand new roll that hasn't gotten started yet, just try to find the start of the toilet paper roll. First you turn slowly. Keep turning. Well, surely I've gone around once or twice by now. Then you go fast. Maybe the wind will open up the first flap. Then you go the other way, thinking maybe I'm going in the wrong direction. Back to slow again. And you find it finally, it's glued down. So then, you try to pull it apart, but only a quarter of an inch separates and the rest stays glued. So you're pulling and pulling, and soon you've got like a 5-foot-long quarter of an inch strip. I don't want a streamer, I want toilet paper. So now one side is fully intact and you've got a groove cut out on one side. So then you use your finger to try to even it out, and you never get it exactly even. So then, you finally just start clawing at it like a wild animal. Jesus, I just want toilet paper! On the other hand, some things that don't need to be made easier are being made easier. They're making these automated toilets that flush entirely on their own schedule. Sometimes they just go off randomly. You're still sitting down and suddenly it just flushes like, hey, how dare you? I'll decide when I'm done. And then other times it won't go off when you want it to. You stand up and you stare at the toilet. Sometimes you have to fake it out. You sit back down, you get up, sit down again, you get up, try walking away, come back, start tiptoeing away. Nothing works. Then, when you go to wash your hands, you don't have any control of that either. It has to see your hands first so it can decide how much water it's going to give you. It gives only a certain amount of water, and you don't know how much you're getting, so you're like a little raccoon under there rubbing your little paws together. It gives you some, then it decides that's enough, and it's not. So then you have to pull out and pretend like you're a new set of hands going back in again. Same thing happens with the dryer. You don't have any control. You have to put your hands under the vent to get air to come out. This is all to avoid germs, which is great. Fantastic. Good for the health of the world. Then you walk over to that disease-ridden door handle, open it up, and head to that bowl of mixed nuts you're sharing at the bar. Technology has done one beautiful thing for us. It's called the cell phone. There is now not one place in the world where a cell phone is not going off. And every cell phone now has its own little song. Good thing we got rid of those obnoxious rings, isn't it? When you're on a cell phone, you can't ever have a full conversation. Usually the reception is terrible, and somehow it's only bad on your side. The person talking to you has no idea you have bad reception. They're rambling on and on, you've got your finger jammed in your ear, you're shushing people on the street, ducking behind a dumpster, putting your head between your knees just so you can hear about your friend's new haircut. What about the bangs? Are they shorter? Are the bangs shorter? The bangs! At least if they're static, you have some clue that you may get cut off. There's nothing worse than when you have crystal clear reception and you've been rambling on for who knows how long, only to find out that it cut out who knows how long ago. Then you get paranoid. Then you're scared to talk too long ever again. Next time you're on the phone, you become obsessed with checking. So, we were going to the cheese shop. Hello? Okay. And we knew we were having white wine. Still there? All right. And I thought, okay, what kind of cheese would go best? Did I lose you? Okay. And I like Munster. Even if you're on a regular phone at home, you'll be interrupted somehow. You'll be interrupted by call waiting, most likely. Call waiting was invented as a convenience. But let's face it, it's really turned into a mini People's Choice Awards. You find out right away who wins or loses. You're having a pleasant conversation with someone you think is a good friend. You hear the click. You're confident they're going to come back to you. And then they come back and say, I've got to take this other call. You know what that means they just said to the other person? Let me get rid of this other call. That's what you just became, a call to get rid of. Then you learn to trick them the next time when they say they've got to check on the other call. Hey, when you come back, remind me to tell you something that somebody said about you. Hello. Of course, you don't have to pick up call waiting. You can get voicemail. Voicemail will pick it up for you. My favorite voicemail is the one where you insert your name into a robotic message. You end up sounding more like a robot than the robot. Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. Ellen is not available. Is that how I say my name? Like Hal from 2001 A Space Odyssey? Yeah, I'd like to make reservations for dinner tonight. There's four of us and the name is Ellen. Phones have gone through such an evolution. Now we have this wireless technology where we can talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime. But think about how far phones have come. You remember there was a time when there was one phone in the house, when cord was just being invented? There was a shortage of cord back then. Maybe you had a foot or two from the wall to the phone. Back then, when you said you were on the phone, you were on the phone. You had to be there. Then the kitchen wall phone came along. Usually a lovely mustard or an avocado green, had a long 90-foot-long cord that allowed you to walk all around the house, clearing tables, wrapping around dogs. So by the time you ended up hanging up the phone, it had become a tangled wire of cord confusion. But what was fun about that was every once in a while you'd hold the phone upside down by the cord and let that thing spin and spin around and around till it found its center. Good times. One surefire sign that things are going the wrong way. Now we have these hands-free phones, so you can concentrate on the thing that you're really supposed to be doing. You know, my thought is this. Chances are if you need both of your hands to do something, your brain should be in on it too. The following is an article I was contracted to write for a major women's magazine several years ago. They thought I would be a good person to write a helpful hints type of column. For some reason, the magazine put a stop payment on my check after I turned in my first draft and it was never printed. Just goes to show, some people just aren't ready for true innovation. Penny pinching for today's gal, or how to land a man. Hey ladies, have you ever found yourself in a financial low with no dough but some place to go? Well, I'm here to tell you that you don't need money to make it happen. You just need a little creativity and a lot of spunk. I've compiled the tricks and tips that I've used over the years to get past my empty wallet and get down to business, or even better, pleasure. Warning, the following tips were concocted and used in a time of crisis and may be dangerous to your health and or pride. Looking good. The key to having confidence about your appearance is all in the details. Take your nails. Nothing builds self-esteem like a beautiful set of nails. Haven't had a manicure in a while, or ever? Do it yourself by opening your car door and dragging your nails along the pavement whenever you slow down for a stop sign. Why spend money on emery boards when you can save dollars a year my way? For a dramatic gray eyeshadow and lash darkener, use the ink that got all over your hands from that newspaper you found on the bus. Haircuts are easy and fun, even for one. Especially with today's messy just-out-of-bed styles, there's really no way to lose. If you can find a pair of scissors, you're in luck. All you have to do is bend over at the waist, grab the bottom part of whatever hair is in front of your face, and chop away. When you stand back up, not only will you have brand new layers and no more split ends, but you'll also get a wicked head rush. Put the scissors down and enjoy. If you can't find a pair of scissors, a bread knife or an old razor blade or a lighter are some options to consider. All of these tools should be used with extra care, so drinking is absolutely not allowed while self-styling. Of course, when you're finished, it'll probably be necessary. If anyone criticizes you or says your new do looks bad, don't hesitate to inform them you just got back from Paris. Maybe it's lying, but what more do rude people deserve? Not the truth, that's for sure. Speaking of which, one man's uneaten strawberry from the side of his daiquiri glass is another woman's free lipstick and blush. It's nature's perfect cosmetic. Just keep in mind it's very sticky and you have to beware of bees, so apply it on a night you plan to stay indoors to reduce the risk of being swarmed. I made the mistake once of applying my Berry Glow in a 7-Eleven parking lot. One minute I was a beautiful strawberry juice princess staring at my reflection in the rearview mirror, adding up how much I'll save by using fruit as makeup every day for a year, $123.93, and the next minute my head was covered in bees. Isn't Mother Nature a fickle, stinging prankster? That's why my personal motto is, when life gives you lemons, use the juice to bleach your mustache. Food is relative. Everyone knows you can make a delicious meal by going to a restaurant, ordering a bowl of hot water, and squirting packets of ketchup into it, thereby creating your own version of a tomato soup. This is called the hobo's delight, and there's no shame in enjoying it, even at the finest eating establishments. Keep in mind, it's fat-free and ready to make. Now, here's a modern spin on this 1950s approach. Go to a high-class dining establishment of your choice. You may have noticed that people who eat at these places rarely finish what they order and almost never do if they find a bug or a fly in their food. Take advantage of this tendency by going to your local novelty store, buying a plastic insect, you can get them real cheap if it's not close to Halloween, and placing it in their food so that they leave it untouched for you to swoop in on when they've stormed off in a huff. All you have to do is divert them before they start eating. Maybe by saying, "Hey, is that $1 million bill on the ground by your foot?" They'll bend down because they're greedy, and when they do, throw the plastic fly or spider or iguana or rubber garden snake or plastic flamingo or fake parrot or even a real parrot onto their plate. A real parrot would be best because they're so loud and brightly colored. They're sure to offend anyone. But then you'd need a well-trained parrot, and those parrot lessons can be very expensive, unless you know where to go. Luckily, I do, but that will have to wait until my next column. Anyway, no matter what pest you choose, you'll end up with a delicious entree. Bon appetit. And don't forget, you have the right to beverages. A lot of people don't know this, but in some states, you do not have to pay for your soft drinks if you tell the bartender that you're the group's designated driver. This may be a problem, as you must have a group to drive in order to take advantage of this brilliant piece of legislature. Keep in mind, most drunk people are relatively friendly, so sidle up to a couple of people talking at the bar, make sure the bartender can see you, wait until someone makes a joke, laugh as loud as you can, and then immediately order a Dr. Pepper. It also doesn't hurt to be constantly jangling your keys and saying things aloud like, "Yep, suck 'em up, you guys. I've totally got the situation covered." Maybe for effect, slap one of the drinkers on the back in a friendly way, but get ready to run if they happen to notice. Home sweet car. You know, you can park overnight for free at a gas station by putting a note under your wiper saying that you broke down and have gone for help. Usually people break down and walk to a gas station, so this reversal of logic will baffle and bemuse the attendants. Be sure to tape newspaper up in the back window so they don't catch on that you're camping out in their gasoline forest. In the morning, wash your hair with hand soap and dry it with the hand dryer in their patrons-only bathroom. If they confront you and accuse you of not being a patron, refer them to your American flag bumper sticker and tell them that flag is proof that no one is more patriotic than you. Immediately begin a rousing chorus of "This land is your land" and sneak away sometime during the first verse. I suggest before "That Lonesome Byway," which is usually the last line anyone knows for sure in that song. These, of course, are just a sampling of the many ways I've found to cut corners. You can always come up with your own methods. All it takes is a little imagination and that old mother of invention, desperation. And stay tuned. Next week, you'll learn how to make your own perfume out of rotten fruit. And, of course, where to get free parrot lessons. Until then, helpfully hinting, Ellen. Working it out. Dieting has to be one of the hardest things for a human being to do, that is, besides parallel parking. And unless you're a driving instructor or a valet, you know what I'm talking about. How many times have you found a spot on a crowded street, and then once you get ready to park, you thought, how am I supposed to fit this huge machine into that tiny rectangle of a space? And then you remember, That's right. I have to back into it. What better way to do something you're already a little leery about doing than by having to do it backwards? Meanwhile, cars are piling up behind you because they all want your space for themselves. You can actually feel their jealousy and impatience. The pressure is on. You check every mirror, turn all the way around in your seat, crank the wheel, step on the gas, and pray everything will work out. And most of the time it does, but only after you pull forward and back 17 times so that you're not too far away from the sidewalk or too close to the cars in front or behind you. It's precise, restrictive, and totally unnatural. Just like dieting. When you decide to go on a diet, it's never because you feel great and want to reward yourself by reducing your food intake and exercising more. The idea usually comes to you after you've gone bathing suit shopping or right before your high school reunion. You feel ugly, depressed, and totally unlovable. Let's face it, these are not healthy states of mind to be in for a major lifestyle change. These are the feelings that make you want to curl up with a quart of Haagen-Dazs and watch the Lifetime Network all day. Now, I'm not saying a made-for-TV movie starring Meredith Baxter doesn't have its own healing powers. In fact, that woman has gotten me through some very rough times. But if you're already down on yourself, lying on the couch watching reenactments of real-life heroism and eating as much ice cream as you can hold is just a quick fix. Eventually, we all have to put the spoon down and get up off the couch. When I'm feeling flabby, here's how I try to look at it. I've been on summer vacation with my body, but now it's time to get back to school. Everyone knows you can't learn anything at a school that has no teachers. This is why I recommend getting a personal trainer. Now, it sounds very Hollywood to have your own personal trainer, but in fact, they have them at every gym everywhere in the country. Maybe even in the world, except Sweden. No one in Sweden goes to the gym. They're all tall and thin and healthy eaters by nature. It's something about the altitude and the fact that there are no starches allowed in the country. I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere. The good thing about personal trainers is that they make you feel guilty. Sure, it sounds bad, but think about it. How many times have you seen someone who jogs around your neighborhood every day without fail and thought to yourself, how do they do it? The answer is they feel guilty enough on their own to make themselves do it. Sure, if you ask them, they'd say something like, oh, I love to jog. That's ridiculous. No one loves to jog. It's painful and boring. They just feel like they have to. Getting a personal trainer is like buying that same guilty feeling, but with the extra bonus of disappointing someone besides yourself if you flake out. You practically want to work out. Practically. I used to be the worst when it came to physical fitness until my psychic introduced me to Rico, the man who's now my personal trainer. We've been through a lot these past 2 years, but I'm all the healthier for it. Not only did Rico guide me through the awkward beginning stages of my new fitness plan, but he also helped me with my poor nutrition problems. I remember when I first told Rico that my weakness is coffee ice cream. You'd think I said I like to eat $100 bills. You can't eat that. Why would you want to eat that? This is the weirdest question I have ever been asked. I actually considered taking the time to explain to him why ice cream is so good. How could he not know? Then I remembered we were on my dime. It's delicious, I wheezed, trying to finish my fourth sit-up. Trainers will always try to have deep, meaningful conversations with you while you're exercising. Get your heart rate up. Well, if you're going to do that, you should have coffee frozen yogurt. It's half the fat and calories of ice cream. So I bought it and I tried it. At our next session, I brought it up during my quad presses. Hey, I had some of that coffee frozen yogurt. You know what else I could do instead of eating coffee ice cream? I could chew on a tan-colored towel. I thought I'd really got to him on that one, but he just increased the weight on my quad press machine. Rico was always giving me tips on how to lose weight faster. Drink more water, he'd say, doing sit-ups while hanging upside down. I do drink a lot of water, I'd reply. Ice cream makes me thirsty. These were things I'd say to Rico to get him all riled up. He was hard to rile, though, especially when he was upside down. Clearly, Rico had no understanding of my love of food. There are people who are like that. They don't really care about what they eat or when or how much or if they can get seconds. They just eat what's good for them. Who are these people? Rico told me in all sincerity one day, you can go to any restaurant, just don't order bread, potatoes, rice, fatty meats, dessert, or wine. Let's see, that leaves carrots and water. Sounds delicious. I don't think he heard me. I was about 15 feet away from him and had just caught the medicine ball he'd thrown to me. Well, at me. And hard, Not the way a boy should throw to a girl. But that was Rico. You can eat whatever you want, just eat less of it. You like pizza? Yeah, let's go get some pizza. I dropped the medicine ball and ran to get my jacket. No, I mean if you like it, you can have it, just one slice. I don't think I've ever had just one slice of pizza, unless it was one of those really big slices you buy one at a time. But those are easily three slices of regular pizza in one huge slice shape. I think the only way I could ever eat just one slice of pizza is if I had the one slice and then knocked myself out with a rock. I wanted to quit. I wanted to go home. I wanted Meredith Baxter to take me away. Suddenly I felt rage boil up in my belly. I felt the injustice of my genes. Why wasn't I born in Sweden like everyone else? Why did I need some jerk to stand next to me counting my reps and telling me to feel the burn? I felt the burn all right, and the burn made me want to punch my trainer in the face. And then, as if by magic, Rico appeared in front of me wearing headgear and holding up two large red padded gloves. Are you ready for some kickboxing, baby? Oh, I was ready. I've had many trainers since Rico, but I still miss him sometimes. If it weren't for him, I would have never gotten into kickboxing, and I'll always appreciate the fact that he didn't sue me. I did hit him pretty hard. Rico was a good sport, but what could he say to me? He was the one that got me so strong in the first place. Smartishness. Do you feel insecure because you keep getting the nagging feeling that you're not that smart? Well, I've got news for you, my friend. You have no need to be insecure. That nagging feeling is absolutely right on target. You are not that smart, but I have more good news for you. You are also not alone. Let's face it, we're all stupid. Each and every one of us. Oh, sure, some people went to college and got degrees, big whoop. I could have done that. I stayed in school plenty long. As long as the law said I had to. You see, scientists have proven that we only use 10% of our brain. And that's on a good day. 10%. Let that figure roll around in your head a bit. You got room enough, after all, you're only using 10% of it. It's just not that much, is it? I mean, imagine what we could accomplish if we used the other 60%. Getting older doesn't help the old noggin either, let me tell you that. And I know I'm getting older because I just use the expression old noggin. I'm not sure if it's happening to everyone, but I'm slower than I used to be. My mind is definitely slowing down. Maybe it's on a little vacation. Needs downtime, just like our bodies. We sleep at night so our bodies can rest for a period, but our brain keeps going with dreams. It never has a break. I would like my brain to cut down on the dreams and get back on the job for me during the day. As I get older, I'm losing my vocabulary, too. It's not funny. I can't find words. Not even big words, just simple words. I'll start talking and I can't access a word I need. For instance, like, see? Even now I can't think of the word. I'm not sure what's happening to me. It's like there's a Bermuda Triangle inside my brain swallowing up all the words I've kept in there for 44 years. Not that I spoke the first year, but I know I listened to words. I'm sure I absorbed some things like, she's wet again, you can change her. Or, boy, she's a fat baby, when's she gonna get some hair? Or, I sure hope she's got some talent, cause she's not much to look at. Or, that Studebaker sure is a good car, I'm investing all of our savings in that company. No, darling, let's leave it in asbestos. How about we do half and half? That's a great idea. And I'm sure you've experienced this one. You know when you've forgotten what you were going to say, even as it's coming out of your mouth? You're gabbing away to a friend. Hey, you know what? What was I going to say? What was I going to say? Now you're forcing your friend to participate somehow. We were talking about floor lamps. No. Mariah Carey? No. Suddenly it's like you're playing the $10,000 pyramid. Things that taste like chicken. Things a monkey would wear. Yes, that's right. We were talking about tiny hats. It's terrible when you forget what you were going to say after two words, but what's worse than that, really, is forgetting what you were going to say when you've been talking for a while. You know, like when you're at a dinner party and a whole group of people are talking, discussing some heavy subject matter, and you don't really have an opinion on it, and then suddenly you think, yeah, maybe I do. So you jump in there to share your opinion, and all of a sudden you realize you've got a pretty good opinion to share. When your friends hear this opinion, they're going to be blown away by how smart you are. They had no idea that you were so smart, and they'll be shocked and impressed that you'd come up with such an interesting point of view. And you start congratulating yourself, And then you start celebrating, and because of celebrating, you completely forget the point you were trying to make. And you're still talking. And they're looking at you like you don't know what you're talking about, and you don't, but you can't let them know that, so you just keep talking, praying that the point will come back to you, and not only does the point not come back, but now you've completely forgotten the subject that everybody was talking about. You really start sweating. You have to loosen your tie if you're a man or Diane Keaton or Avril Lavigne. Then you try to jump out of it by saying any sort of generic statement that comes to mind. Well, six of one, half a dozen other. It's a slippery slope, my friend. Teach a man to fish, and, you know, there's no I in team.
Is there any more Merlot?
I don't remember anything from school, either. I don't know where Borneo is, or South Dakota. I mean, I have a pretty good idea where it is in relation to North and East Dakota, but otherwise I'm lost. And I wouldn't know the difference between a sine and a cosine if they jumped out in front of me, naked in the middle of the street. Here's all I remember of the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events, bippity-boppity-boop. I have no idea what a conjunction is. I don't even know how I thought of the word conjunction. But even though I may not be book-learned and smart, I still consider myself to be street-smart, meaning I think that I usually know what street I'm on. And common sense-wise, I think I'm pretty smart, too. Yet every single time I drive my Toyota Land Cruiser into an underground parking lot, I duck because the ceiling doesn't seem high enough, and by ducking, I'm helping my car make it. Plus, if by some chance we scrape the ceiling, my head will be protected. Or, let's say I'm walking out of my house and I've just had a banana. I have my banana peel in one hand and my car keys in the other. I throw my car keys in the trash and walk out with my banana peel. The other day I found my iron in the freezer, and the only reason I found it is that I was looking for my sunglasses. Sometimes I get a little down when I realize I'm never going to be as smart as I'd like to be, so I've come up with a few little tricks to make me feel better. You're welcome to try them out if you feel like it. I mean, you bought this audiobook. You deserve that much. If, however, you're borrowing this audiobook from a friend, I'd suggest you give your friend a few bucks, or better yet, send me a few bucks. One way I find to start feeling better about myself is to take a good look at really smart people I admire, people who have accomplished something and seem to be extremely successful in the world. I really take a hard look at them, examine them. How did they do it? What do they have that I don't have? What makes them so special? Who do they think they are? They're stupid. They think they're so cool. Well, they're not. And presto, by making somebody look worse, magically you look better. But even though the above method might make you look good to yourself, it's not going to do diddly or peed